This is the Brian Callen Show. All right, everybody, this is the Brian Callen Show, and I just want to remind everybody I'm going to be in Seattle July 12th to the 14th at the Parlor Live. Then I'll be at the Addison Improv in Dallas July 26th, 27th, and 28th. So come and get some. Anyway, you are listening to the greatest podcast of all time, the mother of all podcasts. And I prove that with my current guest sitting across from me, none other than the great Michael Rappaport, ladies and gentlemen. Michael Rappaport.
Throw in the applause, applause,
there
applause.
It is, who's been in, I think, every movie and TV show I can. If you're an actor and you have a career like his, you've made it. And we're doing a movie together here in New York and having a blast. And Mike's a big kid. He stands about 6'3", long legs. And I had to break him up from a fight almost the other day. We were at a bar, and next thing I know, Mike goes, "I'll punch you in your fucking face, yo." Mike, you're from New York, right?
I am from New York City, of New York. Yes.
You grew up in New York, right?
Grew up in Manhattan.
Where?
On the east side of Manhattan.
Yeah? And what got you into acting?
What got me into acting was... Well, I initially started out as a stand-up comedian, not at your level,
which I didn't know, which I love.
I mean, it was
you're
quick,
a funny dude.
Thank you. But I was 19. I didn't really have any craft. I had no act. I was just kind of a shit talker, and then I got called in to audition for a couple of things from people seeing me do 5 minutes here, 5 minutes there. Like, oh, come in for this part, And I got a good break at a good time in my life. And this first film I did was a starring role in this movie called Zebrahead. And that was it. But before that, I just wanted to be a basketball player. I loved basketball and I loved movies. But I didn't ever think about wanting to act.
Like, but when you got True Romance, did you know how good of a movie it was going to be?
That's probably one of the only films that I ever did that I knew everyone knew how good the movie was going to be. Everyone knew the potential of it. The script was so good. There was such a...
Well, because it was written by Quentin Tarantino, and nobody knew that, right?
Yeah, it was written by Quentin. It was right after Reservoir Dogs. Everyone was so excited about him and his work. And, then this next script came out. And also, Natural Born Killers had just come out before we started shooting. So there was, Quentin was like the new thing and the new guy. And then when this script was being passed around, it was just, everyone was excited about it. And then you heard, oh, it's Christian Slater and it's Patricia Arquette. And, oh, Christopher Walken's going to play the gangster. Ooh, and Dennis Hopper. And, ooh, and they got Val Kilmer. Ooh, and I had initially auditioned for a smaller role than the part I wound up playing. Dick Ritchie, I had auditioned for like a gangster part. And I was cast in that part. They couldn't cast the Dick Ritchie part. And the casting director, Mary Verneuil, was like, you should have Rappaport come in to read for that part. And they called me back, and it was on a Saturday. I remember because...
God bless Mary Verneuil. I love
Mary
her.
Mary Verneuil, yeah. And she had me come in, and I read and read and read, and then got the part. And I was like that character because I got the part, and I was like, holy crap, I got the part.
Well, you've always had... The thing about you and working with you has been funny because every take you do is different, and everything you do is funny. But I believe the secret to your longevity and success is your ability to just be truly vulnerable on camera. Like you're a very honest person, like with your expression. You never try to be cool. You never try to be, you're just a silly goose.
Right.
And the vulnerability always comes out on screen, so people like you automatically.
I just try. I mean, it's weird because I know what you're talking about, and it's something that is like probably while I'm acting, the better parts of me come across in the characters. So sometimes, my kids would comment on, you're so nice to them, and you're so mean to us. But it's just...
Why? Because you're irritable.
I am irritable.
You can fly off the handle, but in a good way, because you're just more verbal about what everybody else is thinking.
I'm trying, I am a little irritable. I'm working on it.
You'd never play 007.
What do you mean? That was my goal. I wanted to...
Well, you just got really serious.
Why do I not look like...
No, I apologize. No, you know what? This podcast is already going south. I apologize. I'm not trying to limit you.
But my whole reason for acting is because I wanted to one day do that, and I'm at the age range where they start to cast, mid-40s, okay, handsome, but debonair.
Well, you're not that handsome, and you're not that debonair. I'm just saying, you're tall, but, Mike, I mean, can you even do an English accent?
Yeah. What the fuck?
All right. Can I hear an English accent?
No, because I'm feeling like I'm being judged, and it's just like on
I'm
the
not
spot.
Judging you.
You don't think that I could play 007?
I just don't.
Clive Owen is on his way out, or what's the guy's name? Craig.
Yeah, Daniel Craig.
The blue eyes.
Yeah, but I don't see you that way.
Who was in that he was in that movie with Liev Schreiber, which I liked, but me and my father watched that because we're Jewish and we were like, they don't make Jews like that.
I was going to say, but did 007, I don't see him as a New York Manhattan Jew. I mean, that's...
Why not?
Well, I'm not trying to be, you know, I'm not trying to limit you. I just, he's generally English.
You don't think it could be a New York, why are you stereotyping 007 and stereotyping me? Just because I'm a New York Manhattan Jew.
Well, we can start with your accent, for God's sake, and your abrasiveness. Can you be smooth? I mean, can you give me an English accent? Can you say, for example,
I'll just do Bond. Ahead. James Bond.
Okay, I just don't see, I'm not hearing that. Try it again.
Bond.
No.
James Bond.
Okay, you're going Bond. It's Bond. James Bond.
Right. Check it out how I'm doing it. Bond.
No, you're Bond. No, your mouth
excuse
is going...
Excuse me. Let me...
Well, it's not good.
Excuse me. Bond. Yo, I'm James Bond.
Okay, he doesn't say yo. There you go.
I didn't say yo.
You did. You did. You have so many like urban sort of colloquialisms, if that's
whatever,
the word.
Man. Listen, when I get cast in it, don't come, hey, can I get a part? Can I get a small part? Fuck you. You didn't see it. You tried to burst my bubble.
I'm not trying to burst your bubble.
Nah,
it just seems like a real long stretch for you
Bond
to play.
Yeah, motherfucker, James.
No, see, that's not... That's a very urban Bond, but that actually sounds like urban, like street black, if you will. Yo, I'm Bond, motherfucker.
Yo.
That'd be a really funny movie for you to play 007. Michael Rapaport is... 007.
That's funny.
Daniel Craig, move over. There's a new sheriff in town.
That's fucking funny. That's fucking funny.
It would be great.
That's fucking funny.
Can you do any accents?
Yeah, like I could do a British accent. I could do Australian.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I could do British accent. Tell me what to say. I'll recite the alphabet. Give me a line to say. I'll do a British.
All right, say this is a lovely house that we're in right now.
In like a traditional British accent or Cockney?
Yeah, traditional British.
This is a lovely house we're in.
Okay, that I'm not hearing a lot of British in that. I'm not.
No, traditional British. You're thinking
well,
it was Cockney.
Well,
this
can
is,
you do?
This is a lovely house we're in right now. Okay, this shit is cool.
Okay, that's not that doesn't sound British at all. Can you do a Cockney accent?
Sure. What do you want me to say?
The same thing. This is a lovely house we're in right now.
This is a lovely house.
Okay, that's you're terrible at accents. It sounds exactly the same.
What are you talking about?
All right, well, let's move on from the accents. Let's just move on from the accents. All right, you're very blonde. You've got blonde eyebrows and blonde hair.
Yeah.
Do you think of yourself as a blonde?
I do think of myself as a blonde. I get mistaken, and there's often a lot of discussion. A lot of people, it's always going on Twitter and, you know, and CNN. They could, like, what do you think? Like,
on CNN?
Yeah, a lot of times. Is he redheaded? Is it strawberry blonde? Is he blonde? Is he redheaded? You know, there's a lot of debate
over
that.
Who's saying that? I don't know.
A lot of times, like, Anderson Cooper will sometimes stop
the
show.
I don't think Anderson Cooper's ever said that. See, again,
it's happened. Go on Twitter right now and look at the debate. They have... Michael Rapport is a blonde. Michael Rapport is a redhead.
I don't
Twitter
think,
pages.
I just am having trouble believing that you're
37,000 followers for blonde, and it's like 39. That's,
are you on Twitter, by the way?
I'm on Twitter. Yeah.
What is your handle?
Michael Rapport. But I'm saying there's fake pages. There's like the Michael Rapport is a redhead. It's got like 41,000 followers.
I think you're lying because that just seems like you have an inflated sense of your own fame. I'm not trying to be a dick.
Just go on Twitter right now and check it out.
I will do it right now.
There's like four or five extra fake, you know, fan pages. They're not my pages. People just want to debate. Is he a blonde? Is he a redhead?
I'm not that interested in
that. You know what I mean? And then like the girls are like, why don't you show us, you know, the rest of your hairs and maybe we'll figure it out. And I'm like, nah.
The girls are? What are you talking about?
Yeah, like there's another page. It's on Twitter. It's a Facebook page.
Okay,
Mike Rapp's redheaded pubes.
Oh, God damn it, Mike. This is my podcast. I try to keep it, you know,
I'm just telling you, like, some of the things that are out there if people are interested. I don't follow this stuff. I just get news, like, do you want to shut this page now? Let them have their fun. How many people on 52,000 people?
Okay, you just
on
said
40.
You just said 37, and now you're saying
on
52.
Twitter, on the Facebook page, it's 55,000 people.
Okay,
please.
You're throwing a lot of numbers out there. It just
this
seems
is
like
my life. This is my life.
Okay, all right. Well,
multi-talented, multitasking actor who can do a lot of different accents. Well, and one day we'll be the next James Bond. Don't be jealous.
Okay, I'm not.
Let's just move forward.
All right, let's move on. Now you live in Los Angeles now.
Yes.
Do you like Los Angeles more than you like L.A.?
I don't like Los Angeles more than I like L.A. I don't like Los Angeles more than I like New York. I'm from New York. I'm comfortable being in New York. There are a lot of things I do like about Los Angeles.
You'll never think of yourself as a Los Angelino.
No, but the sad truth is I've probably spent, not I probably, I don't even like, this is how sad and denial I am. I've spent more of my adult life.
I know.
In Los Angeles than I have in New York.
That's right. That's exactly
that's how. The real shit.
I've been in LA for 17 years, and I think about that. I start to say, you know, I think I'm from here now. What do you and I have talked a little bit about,
up.
And for young actors and stuff, and you're somebody who, you know, people could model their career after, but what do you... Do you ever think about what you want to be doing in 10 years? You want to keep doing this? You've worked with Woody Allen. You've worked with big directors.
I always want to act. I love acting.
You know, do you ever write?
I don't write. I rewrite, you know, yeah. And I directed, you know, I want to direct more. I directed an award-winning documentary, which you still haven't seen, about the Group of Tribe Called Quest.
You know, dude, I hear more people talking about that.
Thanks
that
for seeing it. Thanks for supporting it.
I've been
Brian.
Very, I'm That's very busy.
Busy.
But
I know.
I'll wait till it comes out in book form and I'll read it.
Okay, read
the, like, the documentary he's talking about is A Tribe Called Quest. You
Beats, Rhymes, and Life, The Travels of A Tribe Called Quest. It's award-winning. Brian hasn't seen it, but that's cool. I'm glad to be here and discuss
hold on.
Things.
Before you judge me for that. Why did you do a documentary on A Tribe Called Quest?
I did a documentary on A Tribe Called Quest. Obviously, I'm a fan of the group. I've always been a fan of the group. And I had been wanting to do a film, to direct a film, not a documentary, for about 10 or 12 years. This coincided with, I was always curious as to why that group broke up. Because they were at the, you know, the peak of their career. They were beloved. And at the time in hip-hop, a lot of groups were breaking up. But you just never thought about it, that it would happen from them. I always equate it to in hip-hop, it was like the Beatles breaking up. You just didn't see it coming. And I was just curious as to what happened. And I asked the guys, I want to do a documentary about you guys. They were like, okay. I don't think they thought anything would come of it. And it was really kind of nonchalant. Okay, start. And we started. And then it took 3 years and made the film. And it was the hardest creative thing I had ever done. Like the highs and lows of it were. I mean, it was like it took on a whole other.
Did you have
life.
To figure out what you were trying to say and write it on the fly, or how did that work?
You did. I did have to figure out what I was trying to say, because in the beginning you have all these preconceived notions and ideas. Like, I want to tell this story, and then you know you'll get taken down a whole other path that you didn't think of. And you know, some of the stories that you initially thought about telling won't come to fruition, but other things will come out of it. And you know, it's a challenge. It's a challenge, and also it's four guys' lives, so it's, you know, four people's perspectives.
What are they all doing now? Are they
Q-Tip is producing a lot of people's music. You know, he produced, you know, Norah Jones, and he's you know still, you know, very busy music wise, and you know he's got a new album coming out. And Fife is, you know, getting over health problems, and he has a new album coming out. Ali Shaheed Muhammad, like, DJs and still produces, and Jarobi's a chef. But
he's a chef.
Yeah, he's a chef. Huh. I can't remember.
What was it about? You were always drawn to hip-hop,
yeah.
I think, right?
Yeah.
Is that because you grew up in Manhattan? What do you think it was?
You know what it was? The reason, the way I got into hip-hop was my father, I don't know if you, in Jersey, but in New York City at the time, In the late 70s, there was a radio station in New York City. It was originally called WKTU Mellow 92. And then in 78, it changed the format to WKTU Disco 92. And the station went from the worst ratings in the city to the best ratings in the city. And it was my father's call. He was the general manager of the radio station. He, you know, kind of got one up, and they started playing all disco. So, you know, this is 77, 78, 79, and he's bringing home Donna Summers and Brothers Johnson, all these disco records, which we loved. We were kids, you know?
Yeah.
And then one day he brought home, I think it was 1979, he goes, this is by a group called the Sugar Hill Gang. It's called Rap Music. We're going to start playing it on the radio.
A lot of people listening are too young to remember this, but when they came out with that, when the Sugar Hill Gang came out with that rap, for us, I was probably 13 or even 12. Nobody ever really actually heard.
No.
Unless you were from the city.
Right.
When you were from somewhere else and you heard that music.
Yeah.
I mean, it woke up an entire group of people.
Yeah.
I remember watching basketball players listen to that on a big, back in the day, you had big, you know, big like boom boxes.
Yeah.
And they were playing it. And this one dude stopped and goes, man, what, this is cool.
Yeah.
And they just kept playing it over and over again.
Yeah, and that was exactly what it was for me. I was a kid. I fell in love with it. And, you know, obviously I wasn't in the Bronx or in Brooklyn while they were doing black parties and all that stuff. My father was bringing home these records, so he brought home that record, and we played it to death, me and my brother.
Well, what's interesting about that kind of music, and I remember that music, is that even though you were, you know, you're white,
right.
You're Jewish, you're Chinese, whatever you are, it speaks to you.
Yeah.
It spoke to everybody in a way. I remember that song is like a jungle sometimes. It makes me wonder how I keep from going on.
Yep.
That was that guy was telling a story about his neighborhood and about how beautiful, how terrible. Yeah. How, that's kind of what Tupac did. And I don't know much about music, especially not hip-hop.
I know, which I don't understand, because every time I play music, you have a good tell. You're like, what is that? What is that? I need to get you, like, soul. I need to put some soul in your shit, because you respond to it. You're a soulful guy.
I am. I really do, and I appreciate it. I've just never been taken by music as much as some people. You have.
I love it.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the big part of it was my father working at the radio station, because he'd bring home records and, you know, we were always listening to the radio.
Well, you were cultivated from a very early age. I mean, you have an encyclopedic knowledge of it. I think a lot of times when you're exposed to it on that level.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but I interrupted you.
No, no, go ahead.
Yeah. No, I was
flatter
just,
me. Say good
I
things
was just
about
saying
me.
That when you develop a sort of an encyclopedic knowledge of something, you can appreciate it more.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. But, I mean, music is... the thing about music is that it's a part of everyone's life every day. Whether you're aware of it or not, you're either hearing music when you're passing by, or you're singing something, you're not aware of it. You hear it on the radio. You hear it on TV. Like, music is a part of our life all the time. I always keep music playing when, like, you know, in my house when I leave. I like to come back home. I keep the music on. I like to come back home to music because it makes me feel like there's somebody there in the house. It's like, you know, you're feeling down, you're feeling lonely. I'll turn on some John Coltrane, or you know, you're feeling, you know, and they're like people, like they're your friends, musicians. Mm-hmm. I have a relationship with certain musicians. They become like part of my life. But I mean, music is something that's been a part of my life since I was a kid, and it's something that, you know, it's a companion, and it brings me up. It, you know, it helps me calm down. It helps me, you know, feel nostalgic. It's just a big part of it.
I always say that, you know, I mean, I've certainly been very moved by music. Sometimes I find music to be so awe-inspiring that I swear to God, I listen to it and I go, well, you got to believe in some kind of a God.
Right.
I mean, you know, it's sometimes music can be so overwhelming.
Yep.
And you find yourself in a car like crying.
Right.
You know, as you're listening to it or whatever.
Yeah.
Or it just moves you. And a woman who by the name of Karen Armstrong wrote a book called The Case for God, where she takes on sort of the atheist notion that there is no God and all. And she said, well, you know, religion and prayer can be compared to the same thing that music is, mm-hmm. which is it can be a source of great inspiration.
Right.
And certainly, you know, like she said, when you listen to a Beethoven sonata, you can feel profoundly sad and joyous at the same time.
Right.
And only the music is probably the only art form in a lot of ways that can do that.
Yep.
You know, on such a broad scale, because life is rhythm.
Yep.
You know, I always say that, you know, when something doesn't click, when you don't click with a person, they're out of sync. There's something about that person. I call them a sharp F.
Uh-huh.
Like everybody else is playing music and you just hear somebody with a horn going, and I think those people are just out of tune.
Yep.
With themselves and with the rhythm in the room.
And also sometimes, you know, I could be a sharp F. You know, where you come like you're like,
yeah, but you do it. You actually, that's not true, because you do it with humor. And actually, I would
ask my ex-wife.
Well, that's always true. But actually, comedy is rhythm.
Absolutely.
You know, I had Harry Connick Jr. And Fiona Apple both say when they saw my stand-up, they essentially said that what you're doing is playing a song. I mean, what you're doing is when you have a bit, there are highs, there are lows, you speed up, you slow down.
Right.
And part of stand-up is actually learning how to put those words and those rhythms together.
Right.
And so Fiona Apple said to me, she said, you know, that's a song that you're singing.
Right.
It's just not to music.
Right.
It's just a different rhythm.
Right.
And I remember when Harry Connick Jr. one time was explaining to me how Louis Armstrong was such a genius because he was thematic with his music. And I said, what do you mean by thematic? And he said, well, you know how you come up on stage and you start talking about what your fantasies are. And you know, you bring us through all your fantasies. There's a theme there. That's your fantasies. And he was explaining that great jazz musicians can stay within a theme, go off on a tangent, and then come back to the theme.
Right.
And I thought, well, I do the same thing with my stand-up.
Right.
And, you know, in a way, we do the same thing when we're acting.
Absolutely.
You know?
When you're acting, it's definitely the same thing.
Yeah, the only question becomes, artistically, you could make the argument that music whether it's jazz or certainly classical music or whatever, or hip hop, might be a higher form of that expression.
Definitely a higher form than what I do.
Well, you know, listen, and people can't do what you do, though.
Funny about Woody Allen. Sometimes when I was working with Woody Allen, he wouldn't even watch the actors. He would just kind of listen. He wouldn't even be paying it. Like he doesn't use a monitor. Number one,
he doesn't.
But he would. You would see him just kind of like listening to the headphones.
To explain, the monitor meaning like when you're shooting a scene, the director's watching the scene on a TV.
Yeah.
And he doesn't use a monitor.
Nope. Never uses a monitor. I don't know if he does it to this day, but he kind of stuck in his ways. Never uses a monitor. And sometimes not that he's not paying attention, he's just listening. He's big into music, and music is a big part of his life, and he's a musician, and it makes sense, especially with his kind of dialogue and the beats of it. He could just tell from just hearing it.
What's it like to work with him as far as, like, you told me he doesn't like to talk about the scene or the character?
Doesn't like to talk about the scene or the character, doesn't like to talk about, what your motivation is. He doesn't want to talk about any of that actor stuff. He wants you to, he hires actors, he wants you to bring stuff to the table, and then, he'll barely even talk with you. It's not that he's like cut off or cold, because he'll talk to you about other things. He just doesn't want to talk to you about himself or what you're doing right at the moment.
Wow.
And you could talk to him about whatever. I mean, he's a smart guy. You could talk about movies. You could talk about music. I talked to him about sports and restaurants.
He loves sports and restaurants?
Loves sports. I mean, he's big. He's like, he's the quintessential New York Jew. So, of course, he loves restaurants and Chinese restaurants and... he loves sports, loves music, and I remember I was asking, where do you get good Chinese food downtown? He was like, oh, there's a place, and blah, 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 but if you go after this time. But he just doesn't want to get into any kind of theory of the character and motivation of that stuff. You could see him, physically kind of, back off when people do that. And
why is that?
I just think that, I don't think that's his strong suit. I just don't think that, the writing is there. And how many times have you actually done that with a director, like going into, like even in, like comedy's, one thing, but I have never really had like deep, 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 long and, engrossing conversations.
But by the time you get hired, you're there and you've done your job.
Yeah,
exactly. What was the audition like for Woody Allen?
There was no audition. I met with him. It was less than 5 minutes. I went into his office, which is like a screening room on Park Avenue. I walked in. I was very nervous and excited. I sat down. He's like, "Oh, I saw some a film of yours. I didn't know what it was, and I liked it. And you're from New York, right? Yeah. Well, I'm shooting a movie in September. Will you be around?
I'll be around, Mr. Allen.
I'll get sleep here. And I mean, it was a couple of more little, quick questions like that. He was like, "Okay." And then 3 or 4 hours later, my agent called me and said he wants you for the movie. I just couldn't believe it. But the thing that I took away from that experience, getting the part in the Woody Allen movie, is like he trusts the actors. He knows there wasn't like come back in and read. Like he will hire you based his instinct, and that's just been his way for years. And sometimes there's been a few really good actors who've gotten replaced on his films.
Yeah,
and. But he just, there's like, and I always take that with me because, sometimes now, these Yahoo directors will make you come in and first you'll meet and then well, can you come in and read scenes? And you're like, what the fuck? You do some push-ups for me. Like, why the fuck am I reading and jumping through hoops from you
exactly.
If I'm playing a,
What I can do.
What?
Well, no, I'm saying that's what you feel like as an actor.
Yeah.
You've seen my stuff. But
yeah.
I think a lot of times that's an insecurity on an actor's, on a director's
I know, part. But I mean, it's one thing, like I always say, like if I'm playing a librarian from Indiana, okay, yeah, Michael Rapaport, you want the part, you need to come in and show us you could play a librarian from Indiana. But a New York cop?
You can't play a librarian from Indiana, dude.
Yeah, I could do
never
that accent
you.
Too.
Let me hear an Indiana accent.
What do you want me to say? Jesus Christ, being put on this
book. Hi, I'm looking for 100 Years of Solitude. Can you tell me where it is?
You're looking for go to aisle.
Okay, You're looking for
what?
You're looking for.
That was the line reading.
They
in
don't.
The accent.
When you're from Indiana, you don't say. You say four.
No,
you don't
you're
say
not listening
fur.
Correctly.
You
Let
spell
me do
that
the accent again.
Erfur.
Midwestern accent.
I'm
go.
Not looking for
what
fur.
Let me hear it again. Yes, sir. Yo,
hi.
If you want to find the 100 Years of Solitude.
Solitude?
Go this way.
You just went solitude.
Excuse me, sir, and then go
You're,
down that way.
Where are
way.
You from, Mr.
And
Librarian?
Then, who wrote? I'm from French Lick, Indiana. Where are you from?
It sounds to me like you're from New York. It sounds like you're from Manhattan. Say Manhattan.
Manhattan.
Okay.
You got a bad
that's
year.
That's not how somebody from Indiana says Manhattan, dude. You're not good at accents. I'm sorry
doing
to
it right now.
This.
I'm doing my Indiana accent right
it's
now.
The worst accent. It sounds exactly like your English accent, dude. You have a terrible ear. Why? All right, let's move on. Otherwise, it's going to get ugly, and you're just. I'm obviously.
I do an Irish brogue. Here's some of the brogues I do. Irish brogue. I have a Russian immigrant accent, but it's from the 30s. It's different now, well, of course. Excuse me.
Yeah.
And I could do Swiss, and I'm working on a Scottish accent, and I'm also trying to get a patois.
Okay,
down, like,
well,
for, like a Haitian, like a half.
Why would you ever play a Haitian? You could never play that.
I couldn't play. Why not?
What you're first of all, you're very, very light skinned with blonde hair. I
have a Haitian patois that I'm working on.
Okay, well, if that's what you want to do for your next movie,
my Scottish accent's
flawless. Well, my Scottish accent is fantastic.
Oh, mine's really my Scottish accent's really fantastic too.
Is that your Scottish?
Yes, it's my Scottish accent.
Okay, why are you saying Scottish? Because unless you're from the New York side of Scotland, then I think you're a phony.
I think you're a phony.
Well, I'm not a phony because
I'm
obviously my Scottish is unbelievable.
I'm
and yours
Scotland.
Is not.
I'm from Scotland.
That's a worse fucking dude. You're terrible. Look, just stick to playing New Yorkers. Is there anybody besides me? Besides me, is there anyone that you're wowed by?
Besides?
Yeah, hold on.
Hold on.
How much time do we have? We're back in now?
But all they right. don't need us yet, right?
Yeah, they probably do. See, by the way, we're being called. My friend
we're
James
being called
here,
back into we're
my
in
friend
a,
James here is calling us back to the scene. So guess what? How much time do we do? We only did 26 minutes. But
yeah, but
we're
doing a very, 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 very big
we'll
budget
be, we'll
film.
We'll be down in 5 minutes, James.
My man is a loser, and there's trailers downstairs, and there's a huge craft service.
And a bunch of kids
running
around
kids,
a pool.
Bunch of kids, ADs, and all this stuff. We're doing a huge budget film. This
okay,
film's
it's
like,
not that
it's
big,
one
man.
Of the biggest
it's,
budget films I've did. It's like
it's
$85
million.
It's $4 million,
dude. You're just lying.
$45 million budget.
No, it's not. You're fucking lying. Listen, who, in closing.
Okay.
In closing, has there anybody you've worked with that has wowed you?
Obviously, working with Robert De Niro was immensely exciting. Yep. I worked with him on Copland and another film called Men of Honor. That was a big deal because he means so much to any actor. But
I became
particularly,
an actor because of him.
Yeah, I mean, all of us of our generation, he means so much and is inspired. And he set the bar so high and... So that was a big deal, and just being around him and watching him and just being in front of him, like, in, you know, you like it was, like, surreal at times. That was probably the most surreal. Travolta, he meant a lot to me as a kid.
Sure.
Stallone, that was a big deal. But he, probably, I'll tell you, the most impressive actor that I ever worked with, Samuel Jackson, is, like, the reason why he's so good, he's, like, every blocking, every rehearsal, it's, like, boom, boom. Boom.
Yeah.
He doesn't variate too much.
No.
Like, each take is probably, but it's, each take is, like, really good and really consistent. If he was, like, a baseball player, he'd, like, bat. He'd bat, like, 350.
He really does make it look effortless. He's so much fun to watch on screen. He just burns on screen. I love him.
And
he reminds me of a white, an African-American Brian Callen.
Samuel Jackson reminds you of Michael Rapaport?
No, I said of me. I said he reminds me of me.
No. But I'll tell you the thing about him. He makes it look effortless. But when I was working with him on a film that has a weird cult following called Deep Blue Sea, it's a shark movie. Weird. Mm-hmm. But he took, I mean, you'd go to his room the night before and BS around. He's working on his script.
Yeah, man.
You know, I mean, and then you
get. Success on that level is not an accident. Every time you get close, my friend worked with Sean Penn. Said the guy worked. First of all, his script is all full of notes. He works his ass off.
Yeah.
You don't get, you know, it's not success. When you see the greats, you realize that they just work harder than everybody else.
Yeah. Like, and they might hide the process and it might be a private thing, but.
Yeah. I mean, anybody you know that's made millions and millions of dollars, the same thing. Like, they lost a lot of money, too. I mean, nothing comes easy.
They said that Sean Penn busts his ass, too, huh?
Oh, dude, he busts his ass. My friend looked at his script. It was all marked up with notes. He was like, oh, boy, because my friend had the same thing.
Yeah.
And I mean, you know, he's Sean Penn is
really, really, really good.
Yeah, I mean, come on. I mean, it's as good as it gets. There's Daniel Day-Lewis. There's Christian Bale and there's Sean Penn for me. I mean,
Sean Penn is
Yeah.
He I feel like sometimes because of, you know, his involvement in other things publicly, you forget. And then once you go to see him in the films, you're just like, damn.
Yeah, it's
and
true.
He does, and he,
you know, why I respect that guy a lot, though. You know, politically, sometimes I have a different point of view, but that dude went down to Haiti and spent a long time down there.
He
and
does
did
it.
Everything he could. He does it, and I was like, you know what, man? That's a lot more than I'm doing.
I didn't go to Haiti. I didn't go to New Orleans, and he's just. I know. And sometimes he might say things you might disagree, but at least he's saying things.
At least he cares and he's passionate. Yeah. And that's what I appreciate that in this country, because most of us are not most of the things in life don't touch us as much, you know. And he really cares and feels for it. So
and he takes a stand, and there's bigger, more famous people than Sean Penn that don't say anything.
That's right. That's
but
exactly
he's one of my favorites.
Yeah, he's awesome.
He's really, really, really good.
Well, this has been awesome, man. We gotta go down and do some acting.
Is there a reason why you have your clothes off?
Yeah, I just wanted you to see what I'm working with.
But why? We're doing a podcast. I mean, I know that the fans and the people listening can't see, but I just want to say for me.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm uncomfortable.
I know, but I want you to take me in. I want you to take me in. I want you to put your hands on me and bless me. I know it's weird.
Because I'm like, I turn around, I'm like texting, and now your fucking clothes are
off.
Yeah,
but this is impressive. I'm built like an angel. True or false? True or false?
Brian, I just put like your pants.
Okay, I'm just going to, let me arch my back. Or I'm just going to arch my back a little bit.
No. I'm cool now.
You don't want to.
We're good.
All right.
You got enough time?
Okay, yeah. You don't want to put your hands on me and bless me? All right, all right. He's leaving. That's Michael Rapaport, ladies and gentlemen. This is Brian Callen. This is the Brian Callen Show. I'm naked right now, and it's a free country. I don't have to put my clothes on. It's a free country. It's a free country. I'm letting the air hit my body. Jesus, I'm sorry. Whatever. With the home. I'm just expressing myself. All right, I gotta go. I'm gonna use this for the podcast. I'm gonna be. Why don't you? You don't want to take your shirt off?
No.
All right, you're a big kid. You got long legs. All right.
See you later.
You don't want to work out a little bit? I'll spot you. Let's do push-ups.
It's always funny until you're in a moment.
He's such a Puritan. Michael Rapaport, the Puritan. Brian Callen, out.